You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Since 1962, the highest honor a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America can receive is the J.G. Taylor Spink Award, which earns you induction into the Hall of Fame. Our guest, beloved throughout the game, became the first woman to gain entry in Cooperstown through her dedicated work with the Hartford Courant, New York Times, Philadelphia Inquirer, and currently as news editor at ESPN. But the trip to Cooperstown was not without its bumps and bruises, administered by ignorant Neanderthals from the 19th century who felt that women should not be admitted to the clubhouse to do their jobs. We welcome to the broadcast Hall of Fame writer Claire Smith. How does that sound to you, Claire? Hall of Fame writer Claire?
It's otherworldly, and as the great, great Pulitzer Prize-winning Dave Anderson once pointed out, when I called him a Hall of Fame writer, he said, no, my name is on a plaque, and I won an award, but the Hall of Famers are in the hall next door, and that's the way I will look at it. I am so blessed to have my name included on that plaque with 67 of the greatest baseball writers ever. And that's my Hall of Fame within our group, Baseball Writers Association of America. And to be honored by them is just, it's a miracle.
Did you ever give this 5 seconds thought?
Well, if you're a movie fan, you always think, well, what would I do if I'm standing on the stage at the Oscars? Who do I thank? What would I say? Of course, you wonder about how you would react if you were honored by your peers. I always wondered that, because who better to judge what we do over a lifetime and the career we choose than our peers? And to be honored by people that I grew up within the business, to have my name placed alongside Wendell Smith and Red Smith, Damon Runyon, on and on, to my contemporaries, Bob Elliott, Paul Hagen. It's stunning. It really is. It really is. It's taken me aback.
Where were you when you found out?
Well, the annual meeting, winter meeting, gathering of the Baseball Writers Association of America, that's where they make the announcement. And I was in the room, and they didn't ask us to leave or anything. The voting had already taken place, and I was on the ballot with the great Jim Reeves and the great Juan Benet, my dear, dear friends, and Jack O'Connell, Secretary Treasurer, as he says, the good news man. And Derek Gould, they said, let's take care of old business here, and that's the naming of the J.G. Taylor Spink Award winner, and they called my name, and I dissolved into a puddle.
Of course you did.
That's
so very well, so very well deserved. When take us back to the beginning, childhood. When did you first realize you wanted to be a writer of any kind?
Well, my folks always thought that of me as a writer, even when I was in very early elementary school, I would make up poems. I remember one that my dad used to tease me about forever, Where's Thumpkin, Where's Thumpkin? And I'd just recite poetry that they had read to me, or I tried to make up a verse on my own. One of the gifts my parents gave me was an antique typewriter, still functioning, with the ribbon that you had to thread through and everything.
And get your fingers dirty doing it.
Oh, yes. And they must have seen something in me, because what a wonderful gift to give someone in elementary school. But I tapped away at that forever. So it was they saw it. My dad wrote. He was a writer. He's an artist. And his art form was in oils and charcoal, but also the written word. So I think I watched and listened and learned from him, and I got my baseball, the love of baseball, from my mom, who was a Jackie Robinson fan, and she told me the story of Jackie Robinson way, way back in the day, and that kind of sealed it. The wedding of two loves in my household, and here I am today.
That's wonderful, and I bet you were a person who loved writing essays, loved writing all kinds of long form pieces.
Oh, give me a blue book in college, and the professors just had to sit back; they were in for a ride. I could do those all day. It was the multiple choice that got me, but I was enthralled with the blue book because it just allowed you to kind of sit, relax, and think out what you wanted to say to the professor to convey that he or she had imparted this knowledge and this was your interpretation of it. And I love that part of it.
You mentioned that your mom was a Dodgers fan, had an affinity for Jackie Robinson, so baseball was part of the Smith household.
Yes, it was. My mom was born in New York City to Jamaican immigrants, and they sent her back to Jamaica. She was not born in very healthy fashion, so she was sent back to live with grandmother, who was a healer out in the countryside of Jamaica, but she was known as the healer. She could put all kinds of concoctions together. But the stories that my mom used to tell me was the day of shortwave radio, country stores or what have you, that Jamaicans would sit around the shortwave radio and listen to sports from the U.S. She recalled Joe Louis and this, that, and the other. It was a real event to get a live sporting event over the radio. She came to the U.S. and right at the outset of World War II, and was here obviously when Jackie immigrated baseball in 47, and that had a major impact on African American society here.
Right.
Most African Americans became Dodger fans.
Right.
Immediately, and many stayed that way throughout Jackie's life and after. So she was a huge Dodger fan. She told me about Jackie again and again and again. And then in third grade, believe it or not, in St. James Elementary School in Elkins Park, the nuns took my class down to the church in the basement, and they showed us a film called The Jackie Robinson Story, starring Jackie Robinson.
Exactly.
And I fell in love all over again. There was a face and a voice to go with the legend. And Rachel and Jackie reminded me so much of my parents, part of that greatest generation, just achievement-driven, oriented, college-educated, wanting to make a world of difference, and just setting examples for their children and the African American community as a whole, and my parents did the same thing in their spheres. My mom was a chemist. My dad, again, was an artist of some renown, and they were always my role models. And knowing that Jackie and Rachel were their role models, it's a time continuum that has meant the world to me.
Claire Smith is with us. She is the winner of the 2017 J.G. Taylor Spink Award for Meritorious Writing, and her name will be entered into the Baseball Hall of Fame next July, and what an honor it is to have her on my show. sports writing, though, was not something that most women at that time that you were coming out of college were thinking about. How did you decide that I'm going to pursue this path that really has not, it's a path that has not been blazed before you?
Well, I think there were always women who were knocking on the door, and certainly preceded me, the pioneers, Melissa Lutke, who, along with Sports Illustrated, filed the lawsuit that opened the clubhouses in baseball, because she was a baseball writer, and that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to make her living doing what she loved to do. But there were always women in other sports, the NBA and the NHL. You never really heard of issues there because those sports were very liberal in their access policies, and they welcome all attention from any attention from newspapers and electronic media, because they were, let's face it, back in the day, third and fourth on in the list of priorities for a lot of sports editors. So always felt comfortable there. Baseball presented its own challenges. I was very fortunate to end up as a beat writer for the Yankees, because by the time I got there, they were among the most progressive and fair-minded organizations when it came to access and just policing their own clubhouses to make sure there was never any nonsense, never any harassment of any sort. So I was blessed. I had friends who had it much, much harder than I did. I like to tell people I had one bad day in 35-plus years. A lot of my contemporaries had seven bad days a week for every single day they were in this business, and they were brave, and they bear the wounds, the scars, but they stuck with it because they loved the writing, they loved the industry, journalism. It's what they wanted to do, and they stuck with it. Wonderful, wonderful women, and the gentlemen that supported us. I can't say enough about them.
The one bad day was Game 1 of the 1984 National League Championship Series between the Chicago Cubs and the San Diego Padres, and you were prevented from doing your job, effectively. As best you can, as quickly as you can, tell us what happened.
Well, first of all, the two leagues were operated in different fashion. And I covered the Yankees, obviously, an American League team. An American League had very, very strict rules about access. If you were credentialed, you had access. Their clubhouses were open, and that was from the top down from the league president. The NL was more laissez-faire. The league offices left it to the individual teams to set their own policy. So there were holdouts. The Padres, San Diego Padres, were one such holdout. We knew at the Hartford Current that I would be going to the National League, and our Red Sox writer would cover the American League playoffs. We wrote to the league, and the league assured us that come postseason, the clubhouses don't belong to the teams, they belong to the leagues, and I would have access. First day in, I'm the lone representative from my newspaper, had to write a game story, win, lose, or draw. I had to cover both teams, and the Padres forced me out. There was some physical contact when someone pushed me out, hand on my back, and pushed me through the door.
Wow.
It was the most unpleasant one day in my career, but what followed in terms of the support, Steve Garvey coming out of the clubhouse to give me an interview to make sure that I had Padres representation in my story.
Because it needs to be mentioned, you were on deadline.
I was on deadline, and your story isn't complete unless you do the job the way you were taught.
Right.
To get both sides when winners and the losing club as well. But Steve came out. I was starting to lose it a little bit, standing in the dank tunnels of Wrigley Field. And he said, I'll stay here as long as you need, but just get yourself together. You have a job to do.
When you got pushed out, forgive me for interrupting, when you got pushed out of the locker room, was this a loud confrontation that drew everybody's attention, including Garvey's?
It did not echo across the clubhouse. Writers told me later that if I had been closer to the individuals who were causing the uproar, it would have devastated me because of the language that was being used. But I consider it fortunate to this day that a lot of their teammates did not see what was going on, because I had covered a lot of those players as Yankees, including Goose Gossage, Greg Nettles. I knew Bobby Brown, I knew Tony Gwynn, and certainly knew Steve. And I think there would have been issues in there if they had seen and heard the way their teammates were reacting. So I'm glad that they didn't, because I didn't want there to be an issue. No reporter wants to be the story.
No,
and
never.
I certainly didn't want to be the story or cause an in-clubhouse scene. The next day, Goose Gossage, Rich, was all over me. He was practically yelling, you're in there, why didn't you come and get me? Why didn't you let me know what was going on? Well, the reason was I knew how Goose would have reacted, and he would have come to my defense in a very vocal and perhaps physical way. Being the biggest guy in that clubhouse, there were probably teammates that he could have bent in half and hurt very badly. And from what I was seeing the day after, I'm sure he would have tried to do that.
Mm. So Gossage also made his presence very much felt. And because of this, rules were changed immediately.
Yes. It was Peter Ueberoff's first, literally, if not the first week, his first 10 days as commissioner. He'd come from the L.A. Olympics. He'd never seen anything quite like this kind of archaic 19th century drawing up of rules. And when he heard about what had happened, he immediately issued an edict that baseball was now in charge of credentialing and clubhouses, and this sort of incident would never happen again. Clubs could not throw properly credentialed reporters out, and he fixed it the next day.
And in that Padres clubhouse, Claire, were members of the John Birch Society, who basically the John Birch Society was the political wing of the Ku Klux Klan.
Yes, it was that throughout the 20th century. That's what it was most noted for, and there were several members. To this day, I have no idea whether that's what drove them, if it was a race and gender, race or gender, whatever their motives were, but they were the most vocal, and the language that they used was the most hostile. Unfortunately, it garnered the kind of negative publicity that no team should have to carry through the postseason, and the Padres did end up carrying that burden through the World Series against the Tigers. I always felt bad about that. I never had a working relationship with any of those gentlemen. I did meet Dave Dravecki years later, and he told me that he did not remember participating in any incident such as that, but he wanted to apologize. He said that he had long conversations with his maker, if you will, and felt that he needed to apologize and basically ask for forgiveness. And I told him, I said, Dave, that's not my place to do that. I think we were both hurt by what happened, and I think it's time to move on. And I did feel bad because it did scar their reputations, and it sticks with you. But I have vowed, Ed, to go forward and talk about the Garveys and Gossages and Gwynns and the writers, the dozens and dozens of writers who were there for me. Talk about the good guys, the good men and women who supported me, and Commissioner Uberoff and so on and so forth. The Chicago Cubs, who came to my defense. It was their ballpark, and they were not happy that this incident had happened at Wrigley Field. And many let me know how upset they were about what had happened.
You know, but what's crazy, and we're with Claire Smith, Hall of Famer Claire Smith, so get that straight, that your gender gave you a harder time than your race when you were breaking in and for a period thereafter.
Well, I think it was safer, if you will, to be a Neanderthal when it came to gender than it was to be overtly racist. The game at that time was still in the golden era in which many, many African Americans participated on the field, stars, superstars. And I think it would have been a volatile situation if someone came at you on the basis of race. There were too many African Americans there. I remember a player cursing in front of me, and Ken Griffey Sr. shutting him down, saying, "Don't do that." And he said, "Oh, Claire doesn't mind." And he said, "No, don't talk that way in front of Claire." And he told me later, he said, he has to know that, talking about his teammate, that you can't do that to an African-American woman. You wouldn't do it to a Caucasian woman. Why would you disrespect an African-American woman? It was that kind of protective nature there,
right?
That I always felt I was okay.
But there was also another ingredient there, and this is a quote from you. "I've always said that because the sport had, at that time, a much larger representation of Alcoholics Anonymous in uniform, it would be very hard to be overtly racist toward anyone in the clubhouse. However, it's still very easy to be an idiot." Well said, Claire.
Yes, because it's still, well, did we not have a lesson this year in American politics where people talked about locker room humor,
right,
and the things that you could or could not say about women? Apparently, in some instances, it's still acceptable to just be as crude and rude as you want, and that, I think, still goes to this day. Lisa Olson bears those scars. A lot of women bear those scars. But no one ever came at me, or to my knowledge, anyone of color, because of the color of their skin.
And after all of this, as if you were not a role model already for countless others who feel they wouldn't be covering baseball were it not for you, now you have the designation of Hall of Famer.
I get really emotional when people say that. I just wanted to go to work and to write about something that was bigger than all of us, and that was a sport that changed this country. Jackie Robinson's legend was not lost on me. And baseball showed the country the way in terms of race and equality. And that fascinated me. It caught my attention. And it's what I decided I wanted to write about. I wanted to write about the personalities and the fascinating people from around the world that come and practice this meritocracy called baseball, where if you are good enough to play, you play. and it didn't matter what the color of your skin, and baseball got that right more readily than the other sports, and that's why I gravitated to writing about it, writing about its people. So to say that there is actually an award at the end of just wanting to pursue that kind of passion and interest and curiosity, that's just, wow, I should be giving the newspapers that hired me, they should have this award. They should. I thank them every day. I thank every editor that I ever had. I thank every member of the Baseball Writers Association of America that said welcome and stood by me and laughed and cried and hit those deadlines and showed me the way to do it and took care of each other, took care of me. If you want to then top it off with this award, it blows my mind. It really does. It's hard to wrap my arms around it.
Enjoy it. Enjoy the holidays. What an honor for somebody so thoroughly deserving. It is an honor to know you. You were beloved throughout the industry, and we wish you well, Claire. 2017 will be a special year.
And Ed, I want to just take a moment to thank you, because you were always there. You're one of my treasured peers, and I thank you for always, always, always being there.
Thank you so much. So that'll do it for Claire Smith and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.